with Cleveland?
No, when he was with the Cleveland, we got him from the Yankees. Joe was still a real good ball player, defensively and mm-hmm. hitting.
Mm-hmm.
And he teamed up with Boudreau at second base there, and they were quite a combination.
Yeah, boy. Why, who'd you give up to get Gordon, do you remember?
Allie Reynolds.
Pretty good trade-off, I guess.
Yeah, I'll say.
Well, I suppose Gordon didn't do as much for you people as he had done for New York, and Reynolds did more for New York than he had.
Gordon didn't stay with us that long.
Yeah, I see that.
But he did the job that Bill Beck wanted.
Yeah.
He, Beck come in 47, and in 1 year he won a pennant and then a World Series.
That's right. And then another pennant in 54. Yeah.
Well, he was gone then.
Yeah.
He left and he went to the Browns.
That's right. Yeah. Now, Roy Cullenbine.
Well, Roy Cullenbine was just average with our ball club.
Yeah. He was never much more than that, I don't think.
He came from Detroit
mm-hmm.
To the Indians. And he was just an average ball player with the Indians.
How about Jim Hegan as a catcher?
Jim was one of the best defensive catchers in baseball.
Yeah.
And if Jim could have hit a little more, he would have been one of the top catchers in baseball.
Right.
All those years. He was a great receiver. Very good defensively.
Now, when you left active play, you went right away as a coach with Cleveland?
Right.
For how many years?
48 was my first year as a coach. And then I left Cleveland after the end of 63.
Mm-hmm.
I had about 15 years as a coach.
Did you like that?
I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it. I was fortunate enough to have some real talented pitchers there. And,
mm-hmm.
and,
that's right.
Watching Lemon develop from a third baseman outfielder to a pitcher was
had to be a source of much satisfaction.
And I remember Early Wind coming over from Washington. All Early had was a fastball and a knuckleball and a little dinky curveball, not even a curveball, more like a slider. So Early and I worked together, and he developed a little curveball, a pretty good curveball, and a good change of pace,
mm-hmm.
and kind of a hard little slider,
mm-hmm.
and he learned how to pitch.
Yep.
That's what he did.
Brought him along then.
But this took a little confidence, you know, on his part to be able to do those things. He didn't think he could pitch that way, you know. He was a hard thrower, and he was just knuckleball, and that's it.
Yeah.
And he finally started changing speeds and give in to hitters, you know.
Right, no, he didn't at the end give in to them. I've heard it said that he was one of the few that whoever this was talking had ever seen who could get by so much with a high, hard fastball without.
Yeah, that's where he pitched.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whereas a lot of pitchers throwing too many of those would set the new record for home run balls, gopher balls.
Well, he'd pitch. He'd throw a ball off just above the strike zone, it'll be a ball.
Yeah.
And then you throw one real close to that same area, and the hitter would take it and be a strike. So then pretty soon the hitter started to hit that ball that they were calling a strike.
Yeah.
It started hitting the ball on the one up above there, see? And he just had them in between all the time. But he was changing speeds all the time.
Yeah.
They didn't get the good swing.
I saw Wynn a great deal in the 59 season when he was helping Sox win the pennant. And was real sorry when he couldn't get his 300th win with them a couple of years later and was let go. And I was happy that Cleveland picked him up again, and he finally got that one, unexpectedly kind of, in relief.
Early was a real competitor.
That was probably Bill Veeck that brought him back to Cleveland. No?
No, no. That was 63.
Oh, Veeck, yeah, Veeck was
in
long
fact,
gone from there, yeah.
It wasn't long. Let's see, I left in 63. That was Gabe Paul.
Mm-hmm.
Gabe Paul brought him back.
Well, I'm glad he did. There have been so few 300-game winners that you...
Well, you've got to be able to finish up with some ball club to get that 300. That's a lot of victories.
Like Perry got a break this year.
Sure he did.
Nobody wanted him but Seattle, but the old Duffer is pitching good ball despite, in addition to winning his 300th, he's pitched some good games and hasn't won them all. He went 10 innings and gave 2 runs, one earned the other night.
He's blessed with a good arm.
Yeah, absolutely, and never had trouble with it. Yeah.
Never had a sore arm, and I was just telling Sandy, my wife, I said, it's amazing how a man can pitch that long and never have a sore arm. I know.
Especially throwing the way he does.
Yeah.
Negro and some others, the knuckleballers, White Wilhelm,
that's right,
so forth, they don't put as much strain on the arm, I don't think, from what I gather.
Well, it's just sort of a stiff arm deal of knuckleball, but they don't throw hard. You know? I know when I started to have my trouble in 36, I pitched another... 11 years, or 10 years, rather. And if I could have gone through my career without a sore arm, I think I could have added another maybe 40.
Yeah, you would have been getting mighty close
wins
to that.
I really struggled the last 10 years I pitched. I had some pretty good years in 30s. 7:38 or so, but it was a struggle for me. My arm in spring training, was something.
All right, now, how much night ball were they playing when you were pitching? Very much toward the end?
Well, my first night game was in 41 or 2, I think it was.
Of course,
the last 5 years, I guess.
But in those years, before the war or until after the war, they were still playing mighty few night games, as I remember. That is, a team would play 14 a season or something like that.
That's it. Yeah. We still, I can tell you, we played at League Park during the week. Then we go down to the stadium for a night game. Finally in 40s, let's see, Veeck took over right at the tail end of the 46 season, and he moved the club right away down the stadium, out of League Park.
And to a new attendance record, I think.
Oh, golly, back to me.
And it seems to me somewhere in there, whether it was with Veeck or before him, when they first played in the big stadium, they set a new, what was then a new, maybe still is, attendance record for the major leagues, 77,000.
For the game, you mean?
For some game, yeah.
Well, in 1932...
I may be thinking of the All-Star game.
Well, we opened the stand. In fact, I pitched that first game in July 32. That was the first game played in
was
the season.
Was it really?
Yeah. And I pitched against Lefty Grove in the Athletics, and he beat me 1-0. But we had 82,000, I think it was. But there was about five or six thousand in there that was freeloaders,
yeah,
you know, passes.
Always, yeah.
And I think the actual paid was 76 something.
Mm-hmm.
That's so they, people. It was packed that day.
Yeah, it'd have to be.
Yeah. And then during the World Series, they had, in 48, they had them behind the fence,
yeah,
out in the center field, or in the outfield. They went over 80 then.
Mm-hmm. You were there when Satchel joined them.
Yep. Yeah, I know Satchel very well.
And then you were in Comiskey Park when he pitched his first complete game shutout, and I was sitting there watching it.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
5-0, as I remember it. Then he goes back to Cleveland and shuts him out next week, 1-0.
Yeah. He was a wonder. Yeah, I think that night in Comiskey Park, I think they were probably breaking down the door or the gates to get in.
57,000, I don't know how many.
Yeah, and they couldn't get in fast enough, and I guess they just pushed their way
in. Finally, yeah, they broke through.
Yeah.
That's right.
I recall that. Yeah, I used to get a kick out of Satch.
Mm-hmm.
On the sidelines when he'd warm up just to loosen up everything, we had he always had a sort of a act that he'd put on.
Yeah.
He'd take a matchstick and he'd lay it this way, you know, horizontal there, and then he'd hit it, you know, with a catcher, and instead of having a plate, you know,
mm-hmm,
work with it, he'd work with that matchstick.
He'd
go walk. Then he'd say, well, turn it the other way, you know, the long ways. He'd pull that all the time.
What a guy.
Yeah, he'd pull that all the
well,
time.
Well, it's a shame that the color line wasn't broken 20 years before.
Yeah.
In terms of some of the great players that could have gotten in there, Josh Gibson and Cool Papa Bell and...
I pitched against the St. Louis Stars in Omaha when, mm-hmm, in fact, in 27, when I finished up with Omaha there.
Yeah,
they came through Omaha on an exhibition game.
Oh, good time.
And they had Josh Gibson. And,
yeah.
And, I pitched against them.
Yeah, they were a great team.
So Barney Burtz, the owner of the Omaha Ball Club, asked me how I was going to pitch to him. I said, well, the same way I always pitch. He said, well, he said, those colored hitters are all good fastball hitters, he says.
Mm-hmm.
So he says, I'd be careful of throwing a fastball. So all I did was throw a little dinky curveball, slow curves,
yeah,
and very few fastballs, and I beat them 4-2.
But they didn't
hit anything then.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
They're all looking for that fastball.
Sure.
Know?
Well, they've got a lot of company. I played semi-pro ball a few years and could hit the fastball.
Mm-hmm.
And I always said, if some nut hadn't invented the curveball, I would have made it higher up. But they could get me on the curve too often.
Well, that broke the back of a lot of hitters, I'll tell you that, of the curveball.
Right.
They don't throw that curveball as much now. There's some good curveball pitchers in baseball now, but they don't throw it as much. They got that sort of a little slider that's a little bigger than a slider. You know?
Mm-hmm.
That's what they use.
Who had the best curve in the American League in your days?
Well, it's hard to say. I can't recall them right quick.
There's one that they always, a lot of people talk about, was Detroit.
Oh, Tommy Bridges.
Yeah.
Yeah, Tommy had a good one.
Yeah. A lot of them talk about Johnny Morrison in the National League as having about the sharpest breaking curve in those days. I don't know whether they're right or not.
That was one of my best pitches, too, a curveball.
Mm-hmm.
Curveball and a sinker, fastball.
What do you think was your best game, Mel? Can you recall one that could stand out like that?
Well, I had some good games that I recall.
Mm-hmm.
The one that I pitched the opener in the stadium 32, where Grove beat me 1-0.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've had a number of good games that I thought was well pitched games. Like some of them I lost. I don't.
Yeah.
But I won a number of shutouts. And one of the best games I recall pitching was after my arm operation.
Hmm.
And I think it was about 1942, and against the Yankees in Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
And I beat the Yankees that night 5-3, and I struck out Joe DiMaggio 3 times.
Oh boy!
So that always, you know, stood out in my mind. See, and I recall that, and then the. The game of the All-Star game in Polo Grounds in New York, 34,
mm-hmm.
when I pitched those 5 innings. That was another game I always remember because shutting out those hitters. They had some good hitters in that lineup.
The whole ball.
And, but I had a number of games that I thought was pretty well pitched today.
Not sure. Couldn't win that many. Without it. Could you think of what your greatest thrill was in baseball? Or is there anything that stands out that much?
Well, I think the greatest feeling I think I had is when we won the pennant. 48.
Mm-hmm.
Although I was a coach,
you were part of it. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. We really had a thrill out of that. We had to go to Boston for the playoff game, the Red Sox, before we won it. You know.
Yeah. That's right.
And they had to add it to it.
That's when Lou really led you to the pennant.
Yeah, that's right. And the World Series, actually, the first few games of the World Series was more like an anti-climax.
I can believe it.
After that playoff.
Yeah. Was Phil Macy out at second base?
Oh, yes. Yeah, he...
Do they have movies or anything?
I've got some pictures of
it. Have you really?
I've got the World Series deal. But... Lou tagged him on his arm, and of course he was way back here at the mm-hmm. base, and Lou had him as he'd gone in, and he's going right up the arm.
Well, the umps blow him now and then.
Clem, I think it was.
I don't know.
No, I can't remember who the ump was. No, Stewart.
Yeah,
Stewart.
Clem would never have admitted it if it were.
he was out.
Yeah, he was gone by
then. Yeah, I still got the stills out there.
Interesting, because that denied feller is World Series win, probably.
Yeah, it sure did.
Yeah.
We had a good pickoff play. Well, I'll tell you, they
must have.
And that wasn't the first time we've used it.
No, of course not.
And Boudreau used to tell the umpires, too, when
to watch for it.
To watch for it.
Yeah. Who were the characters, as well as good ball players, that stand out in your mind for their antics, pranks, wisecracks, being funny, or anything else? Any of them that you could mention?
Well, of course, you're talking about like Nick Altrock and Al Shaq?
Yeah, maybe that kind, but just any players who would be unusual, be a little out of the ordinary, who would pull off stunts of one kind or another that were unusual. I don't know if you had any on your Cleveland team to speak of.
I can't remember. Yeah. Comedians, you're talking about a comedian.
Well, more or less, yeah.
But we used to really get a kick out of Al Shaak and Nick Altrock, but that's a different kind of setup.
That's true. Well, the whole baseball public did, yeah, they used those characters.
We used to, when it the game was held up for rain, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They used to put it on.
Mm-hmm.
On the rack. And they were good.
Absolutely.
But I, right that's offhand, I can't think about these.
That's all right. Now, you say, how many years did Lopez manage Cleveland? Several.
I think that he came in there about 1952.
And he came over to Chicago in the late 50s.
58?
Yeah, let me...
They won the pennant in 59, didn't
they? Yeah. Lopez was the manager in 53, and Lopez was the manager in 52, and in 51.
51,
yeah. Yeah. In 50... Boudreaux. So he took over in 51.
Yeah.
And then went to, he's in Chicago in 57.
Was he that early, huh?
Yeah. He was in Cleveland in 56. So he had 6 years from 51 to 56 with Cleveland. And finished second darn near every year in that spell, didn't he?
Yeah. He,
56
yeah,
was
he
second. 55 he was second. 54 he won it. 53 he was second, 52 he was second, and 51 he was second.
I'll be darned.
Yeah. Second five.
That's what probably got him all of fame, huh?
Yeah. That would help. Do you remember any weird plays or unusual incidents on ball field? Plays that had everybody all fouled up or anything? Don't worry about it if nothing comes to mind.
Well, those kind of things, if you just have a little time to think about.
That's right, yeah. Pull one up on the spur of the moment is not very simple. What's your feeling about the hold that baseball has on the American public, which goes on really unabated, possibly increasing through the years, despite the fact that pro football, which didn't really amount to all that much until in the 50s, pro basketball, nothing till after that, and a lot of other pro sports that have come along in the last couple of decades, they've earned enormous followings, but baseball continues. In other words, they're not drawing it away from baseball. They're getting it through an increase in the population and more sports-minded public and more publicity, I guess. But is there anything special, as you see it, about baseball that keeps the people are coming back for more year after year?
Well, I naturally, there's the new fans, the kids and everything, they grow up, you know, and they keep coming.
But an awful lot of the old-timers are there, too.
Oh, yeah. But I think that television and radio really helps a lot.
Yeah.
And you get, in baseball, you get the games... by radio, and you get them by television. Mm-hmm. Not much more than you do football on once a week
true.
Deal.
That's exactly it. Baseball is a daily, everyday proposition.
And I think that radio really helps around the big league areas.
Oh,
you know,
yes. Oh, my.
Country, their territory.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know that kids listen to that radio more than they do. Well, they don't televise all the games.
No,
maybe Chicago or New York.
That's right. You got in just certain places.
Yeah.
The White Sox and the Cubs have proved. White Sox this year have gone into cable TV.
Cable, yeah.
But I think they've proved through the years that televising every game, home and away, does not cause a loss, but rather an increase in the attendance.
Creates fans.
But, yeah, there's so darn many places like San Diego. They'll televise about two home games a year.
Mm-hmm.
They'll do oh, I suppose 30 road games.
Yeah.
And where you move in like that, as they did 14 years ago, with fans that didn't know much, most of them, anything at all about Major League Baseball,
right.
You got to educate them. And TV will do it better and faster, I think, than anything else, but they don't see it.
Yeah, I think if you have good announcers,
yeah,
that, you know,
yeah,
people get attached to.
Yeah, they've got pretty good announcers. They got Joe
Coleman, is he back?
Jerry. Yeah, they elevated him from the booth 1 year as manager. He didn't do it, so they put him back.
Yeah.
And then they got Dave Campbell, who played second base in several teams, including San Diego for a few years. I don't know who else. He's never outstanding. And they have a local TV sportscaster, Ted Leitner, who is a character of the first water, and interesting and never dull, and controversial is everything. Mm-hmm. And the three of them do a good performance.
Good job, man.
Yeah.
Well, I think that really stirs up a lot of people, because the radio, you can get it in every nook and corner. You know,
mm-hmm,
stores and
mm-hmm,
bars and...
That's right.
Around, and it, they have it on all over, and I think it makes fans. It makes fans out of kids.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, television. I hear some people say that they can't stand it. Kind of gets dull on them, you know. But
they're not real baseball.
No,
fans.
They're not.
Yeah.
And they probably feel the same way about basketball and everything else.
Well, I do about basketball. That racing up and down the court and throwing the ball in the hoop all the time gets to be pretty...
Well, basketball, honest. The best part of a basketball game is about the last 3 or 4 minutes.
Mm-hmm. It usually is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Of course, sometimes the last out is the most interesting one in baseball.
Yeah. I mean, a basketball game, so it doesn't seem to get interesting to the last 5 minutes or so.
What about... the artificial surfaces they play on nowadays so much. You never had to contend with one of those.
No.
Had they even any of them come in when you were coaching still?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. We at the Astrodome and.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's see. Where else was it that started to come in?
Well,
Astrodome was one of them.
Anyway, do you think that? Detracts from baseball as it ought to be played?
I think so.
I do, too.
Ground balls through the infield are different on artificial turf than on...
That's one. Too many of them get through. They wouldn't get through otherwise.
And a natural turf, the ball may take a little skip or a high hop or go to right or left. And you don't have to worry about that too much on artificial turf.
That's right. But what you do have to worry about is that high bounce.
Yeah, that's right.
The outfielder thinks he's got a chance to come in and catch the ball off his shoe tops. He's got to stop in plenty of time if he decides he can't do it.
Right.
If the ball goes right over his head.
Yeah. You can't play it there. You have to let it bounce.
Yeah, way up. And... a chop right down to the ground from the batter's box will stay up in the air long enough that a good runner will beat it out most of the time.
Yeah. They don't have too much dirt around them.